A couple weeks ago, Stuart McLean's monologue on CBC's The Vinyl Cafe included the story of a high school senior wanting to go into art. His father, a carpenter, I think it was, wanted him to get a real job. This comment reminded me a lot of those I heard growing up when someone achieved a degree in English or French or philosophy. What kind of job would that get you? Any answer at all was quite sincerely quite unimaginable. They had no idea. Higher education meant training for a particular profession, whether it's stenography or nursing or medicine or even veterinary medicine. The end of the education process was concrete, defined. Education as transformation of oneself was not understood. Further education was merely training for a particular job. A while back, I came across an article in the Utney magazine on the different sensibilities the author found in growing up working class, which is what I did, but was now living and working in the middle class. I don't remember his details. I do remember that he gave no easy answer on how to straddle that line between the two worlds. I confess, I was looking for what his answer was. I too feel like I'm on the margin of the middle class, even though I have a couple of university degrees and work in an ancient and honorable profession. The author of the Utney article, I'm sorry I don't remember his name, had grown up the son of a tradesman of some stripe. His mother may have worked too. He went on to university and entered professional world. But he realized he didn't always fit there. The humor was different. Instead of the deprecating, maybe even biting, but affectionate humor he had grown up with, he had to learn a new kind of joke. Put-downs were not considered funny. He felt on the edge of his new economic class. He was there because of his job, not because he was born to even modest privilege. People did things differently, even had different values. This author's situation is not unique. There are many of us who have moved up the ladder economically. We have nicer homes, perhaps, than the one we grew up in. We eat fancier food. We even dine out and go to movies and theater and concerts. Our lifestyle may be more sophisticated, perhaps even more urban. My own experience is that the religion has changed for me as well as I moved from working class to professional and middle class. My father's religion, I know, gives him hope, but it's hope as in endurance, support to make it through the dark night of the soul kind of endurance. I believe God is more tangible to him. Certainly, I found that my religion of origin had more answers than it allowed questions. The education that encouraged me to question theories and make sense of what I read and heard moved me irrevocably away from the religion in which I grew up. It wouldn't have had to be in a formal education, of course. I had a friend who did very well at educating himself beyond his grade 8 education. He spent his spare time at work reading not novels for escape and just to pass the time, but serious books that gave him something to think about. As I became more confident in living in the questions, I became less and less comfortable with Orthodox religion. Of course, my previous religious experience was still there under all my need for answers. Professor David Bumbaugh of Meadville Theological College speaks of this living in two worlds. He says, in his book, The Web of Preaching, Richard Eslinger discusses African-American preaching and worship, referring to what W.E.B. Du Bois calls a felt two-ness, the consequence of living in the context of two cultures, African and American, simultaneously. This, Du Bois argued, produces a kind of creative marginalization, allowing for a productive engagement at the interface between two worlds, the ability to engage and critique each from the perspective of the other. The second manifestation of our own denomination's middle class origins, and he had talked a lot about how our Unitarian and Universalist worlds had come from very middle class origins, whether it be the merchant class on the seacoast and the Universalists, or the merchant class of the Unitarians in the Boston area. This manifestation of middle class origins is a version of this kind of creative marginalization, refusing to be defined by our communities of origin, but unable to rid ourselves of them, longing for acceptance and determined to be true to ourselves, we live in a kind of spiritual two-ness. We are an anti-establishment movement with roots deep in the establishment. We are a countercultural movement which owns and claims a rich culture. We are a high-achieving people with an abiding fear of failure. We are individualists who dream of a blessed community. We live in these boundary zones. We move between these worlds, embodying in ourselves an ongoing critique of each, precisely because of our marginal status. It is precisely this two-ness, this creative marginalization, which underlies and shapes our institutional life and defines our peculiar contribution to the larger cultural and religious conversation of our time. In my experience, living on the margin has not been easy. All during junior and senior high school, my classmates were the smart kids, the ones whose parents were lawyers and professors and teachers. I was a farmer's daughter, and I felt that difference quite viscerally. I didn't know how to interact with them. I didn't find anything in common. My clothes weren't quite right. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to talk to the guy who sat beside me even until grade 12. I didn't have the money to stop at the hamburger joint after school, and if I had done so, I would have missed my school bus home. It was finally at university, in the animal science section of the agricultural faculty, that I felt more at home. Most of my classmates were farmers and certainly going into agriculture. One of my roommates was a farmer's daughter, too. I finally had company on the margin. There were others out there like me. It was as if I had come home. It's tough being on the edge of things. One feels insecure, always a little bit off balance. What little push will push me over, falling flat on my face? The path up the mountain feels narrow and torturous. Sometimes I think that being a Unitarian is by definition a living on the margin, even within a Unitarian congregation. True, we may feel as if we have come home when we first find a Unitarian church. The challenge then is when we find ourselves again on a margin. Where is the center of this Unitarian church? I don't seem to be there, and I can't even put my finger on it. Brian Kiley of Edmonton has described Unitarianism as a donut, a Tim Hortons donut. He uses the image to say that there is more circle than whole. We are a circle of community, a circle of values. We have no pillar of faith in the middle holding up our world, no central theology that we can all cling to. What we have is a circle of beliefs, which includes Christian and pagan and Buddhist and mystical and humanist beliefs, among others. It's the circle of community that gives us strength and wholeness. Think of the circles we make as we close our service. We work to make sure that each person is connected, that each one is held in the circle. When we experience difficult times, it is our connections to each other that support and sustain us. The circle is vital to our well-being. Our community is life-giving. We don't need that pillar in the middle. It is becoming more and more obvious that none of us are at the center. Maybe at one time, Unitarianism felt like it had a center of liberal Christianity back in the 1800s, a center of humanism more recently. But that is no longer the case. Humanists themselves are now feeling pushed off-center. One longtime Unitarian friend of mine commented that his church had moved away from him. He was a humanist. Unitarianism is moving toward a more gentle, perhaps mystical even, middle. Certainly a place where there's a greater diversity of beliefs. That hole in the middle is still there, though, giving each of us a place around the circle rather than in the center. Around the circle, with a place of our own, is when we have the most creative interchange, when we can touch one another. This is when we feel more connected than marginalized. It's important to work at that balance, to foster the connections, to hold on more tightly to each other when we are feeling like we might fall off the edge. For it is in the dialogue with each other that we both listen and learn about each other and about ourselves. It sometimes takes courage to engage in this dialogue, I know. We need our community to affirm us, yet we don't want the community to set everything, to tell us what to do all the time. We want to learn from our community, but we don't want to be ordered around by it. We do have an ambivalent relationship with this notion of community. Just how much will I let myself be immersed in it? How much will I let it dictate to me? I see community as both a creative challenge to me and my thinking, and a support for the times when I am not able to think, for when I am tired or sick or in despair. Engaging in the community, even when it is scary or boring or I'm feeling burnt out, is my investment in my own future and in our collective future. I know that at some time I will need to cash in the support I've given others and accept support from you. It's an investment in our collective future when I see us engaged in projects like the food bank or so many of us involved in the election. This probably sounds like motherhood and apple pie, but I see hesitation to get involved in many places. I see an unwillingness or a hesitation to engage in dialogue, for fear, perhaps, of being further marginalized. I hear folks say, "I'm tired of listening to what people don't believe in." My response is that it is essential that we refocus our energies to recognize that many of us feel like we live off the center. I believe that it is more important than ever to hang on tightly to each other, all the while alert to those who wish to join our circle. It is this vision of a just and beloved community, in the words of James Luther Adams, which keeps me going. No one ever said it would be easy to live in this way, but I say the alternative is even harder. John Parker Manuel says, "The path of spiritual growth calls us out of our comfort zones. That's why we pursue it together. With each other's support, we have the chance, if we will open ourselves to it, to experience other people and cultures firsthand, to disarm our fears, and to appreciate the other. That is why we sing, 'Come, come, whoever you are.' It isn't about spreading our gospel among the heathen. It's about our own need to be stretched, to learn, and to be whole." Amen.